First of all, thank you very much for this invitation. And I know many of you are quite a romantic theorist, so that, you know, let me give you quite a realistic, you know, talk, you know, about quantum spin leakage on the hand commonalities. But I'm the only person who give a real spin leakage talk, you know, in this session, okay? Yeah, and after kind of publishing, you know, not publishing, submitting a paper on that, you know, recently we got the magnetization data, and that changed kind of our understanding of what is elementary excitation a lot. And at the end of my talk, let me discuss that, you know, frankly. And since I know there are, you know, a few kind of specialists here, and I want to hear your reaction. So, but anyway, so. So this, this particular, you know, project was, you know, done in collaboration with those people in at the Stuttgart and Tokyo, and in particular Tomo Takeyama, Yosuke Matsumoto, and Kentaro Kitagawa. Those three are kind of key players of this project. And then, as sent you, you know, summarized at the beginning of. You know, this session, you know, quantum spin leakage is a kind of holy grail of quantum magnetism, in particular for, you know, experimentalists. And, you know, since Anderson, you know, provided a kind of conjecture of Abu state, I think more than 40 years ago, you know, those geometrically frustrated lattice was a kind of major playground for, you know, realization of a quantum leakage state. And although, you know, I realized that, you know, there is a still ongoing discussion, you know, what is ground state of those RVB spin leakage, but, you know, experimenters did a good job, and we have, you know, more than a few candidates in that moment. And as you noticed, you know, like organic, we seem to have a gapless spin leakage, and we have a quite, you know, mobile excitation. And this hypersmith that Yan Li discussed, you know, this morning. And recently, you know, fresh air was brought by Alex Ekter. And I understand that he brought his idea first to KATP, the blackboard of, you know, patio. That's kind of my understanding. And so it's kind of great to give this talk, you know, here at, you know, KATP. But anyway, so he proposed a very simple model on hand commonalities. So you place S equal one spin on top of hand commonalities, and you know, you connect, you know, those, you know, spin one half spins, you know, by Ising bond, and you have, you know, 320 degree bond on top of hand commonalities. And each, you know, bond, you know, has, you know, Ising, you know, axis x, y, z. Okay, so therefore, you know, this bond try to polar spin x direction, y direction, z direction. They conflict each other. So you can see some frustration. And Kitaev showed that by introducing you know, Majorana, you know, operator, you know, he showed that, you know, ground state is exactly solvable. So this case, you know, as far as I understand, we don't have, you know, confusion. We had, you know, Kagome lattice. You know, we know exactly, you know, what it is. But of course, you know, if, you know, we realize a purely Kitaev model, you know, we know ground state. But in reality, also, we have many other interactions coming, and the situation is, you know, as complicated as, you know, Kagome lattice. But anyway, he showed that, you know, ground state. Using two kind of Majorana parameters, you know, Ante and Majorana, which give like, you know, Dirac-like, you know, excitation. And the G2 flux, which has, you know, small gap and highly localized in character. That, you know, what did. And because, yeah, and since, you know, this community, everybody kind of looking for Majorana. And this gives us a very good chance, you know, to find, you know, Majorana particle in quantum magnets. So everybody wanted to rush into this business. But why, you know, materialization of Kitaev state, you know, wasn't, you know, clear. Because normally S equal one half spin is kind of Heisenberg, not Ising. recently, this collated oxide community started working on iridium oxide a lot. And during that process, we noticed the iridium 4 plus oxide, which has, J 1 half spin moment, equivalent spin 1 half, provides a promising playground for this equity physics. That's the kind of beginning of the story. So we have, iridium, 4 plus, oxide inside, octahedron, like this, okay? And iridium 4 plus has, five, d electrons, okay? And because of big, crystal field splitting, so we have five, d electrons into triply delayed T2G of tau. So you have one hole here, okay? And the point is that, since iridium is a very heavy element, okay, two lucky number 77, okay? That's why I like it. But spin orbital coupling is as large as, almost one electron volt, actually 0.77 electron volt. So therefore, it's kind of much larger than crystal field splitting, and the T2G of the split into J1 half and 3 half, okay? And as a result, if you have 5 d electron, you have, one electron per orbital situation, okay? And we realize that, because of this, many of iridium 4 plus compound can be a Mott insulator, okay? And some sort of a spin orbital coupling in this Mott state. And once, you have kind of Mott insulator, okay, your moment has, this character, J1 half, and then you can see equal superposition of XY, YG, ZX orbital, because spin orbital coupling try to make, your wave function as isotropic as possible. So it's quite isotropic. And there is an imaginary index I representing orbital motion. So this is a spin orbital complex state, okay? And this, wave function has kind of phase, I, and this comes into, magnetic interaction, okay? Unlike, layers, oxide, this transmetal oxide, those d function commit to magnetic coupling. For example, if you have so-called edge shared bond, which is kind of 90 degree, like this, okay, octahedron shared edge, okay, you have two super exchange paths in upper and lower, and those two paths have some sort of a quantum interference, and as a result, the coupling between two neighboring J half spin could be quite isotropic. Actually, if you have an only super exchange path, you have fellow coupling only when J half spin is perpendicular to the plane. Other direction coupling is zero. So you have kind of Ising limit coupling here. So like J one half is equivalent to spin one half, and then you have completely Ising fellow. So here you find the essential ingredient of Kitaev model. Of course, you have to put it on top of a hand camera like this, but nature is great. Before we start realizing a Kitaev model, people know it's kind of a hand camera like this made of iridium oxide. For example, this is iridium iridate 213. As you can see, it has layered structure, and iridium in between layers, and the layers are made of hand camera like this of iridium octahedra, okay? You can see octahedron that kind of forming a hand camera like this. And the J shear edges, okay, here. And the edge sharing means a 90 degree bond. So here actually you have Ising bond, okay? And each octahedron has three orthogonal edges, right? So by sharing three orthogonal edges, so you have three bond, X, Y, G polarized, okay? So here actually you have essential ingredient of a Kitaev model, like this. So like, this is, figure shows how those iridium, oxygen octahedra connects, neighboring octahedron. And then you can see three edges sharing bond, each, perpendicular to each other, orthogonal, okay? So now actually, this actually mimics an essential feature of Kitaev model, okay? Three bond, X, Y, Z kind of polarized Ising, okay? And what did I will again call, actually, yeah. And believe me, I'm a kind of graduate of Buddhist high school, and when I was a high school student, I was sent to a Zen temple for punishment, and I learned, you know, what is Zen concept. And I was told, you know, the concept of Japanese Zen is nothingness, okay? So you have to be nothing, okay? And somehow, looking for spin liquid, you know, it's kind of no kind of a topological order. So we are kind of looking for nothing. Actually, some of my friends actually blame me, oh, you're looking for nothing, you know, it's kind of crazy. But anyway, so we are interested in finding a state, you know, which doesn't, you know, break in symmetry, you know, paramagnetic down to lowest temperature. And this is kind of Zen temple, okay, in Kyoto, represent nothingness. But if you take a look at this stone, you know, garden in detail, you find a topological pattern. And of course, nothingness, but we have to find some sort of exotic elementary topological excitation. That's what we do. And everybody rushed into, you know, investigating this 2-1-3 layered Hankam compound. And, you know, at the beginning, you know, we knew two kinds of Hankam iridate, which, you know, sodium and lithium, the same structure. And this is, you know, magnetic susceptibility of those two compounds. And at the high temperature, you can see Curie-like behavior. And this Curie-Weiss constant, you know, gives you kind of the moment of, you know, equivalent to spin 1/2. That's fine. So local is spin 1/2, like, in a moment. But that, you know, there are two things. First of all, you know, at, you know, low temperature, you know, you can see clear, you know, anomaly like this. That means, you know, you have, you know, long range ordering. Okay, so that means you know, we don't have nothingness here in those, you know, compound. On top of that, if you plot, you know, 1/chi as a function of t, okay, this extrapolation gives you Curie-Weiss constant, and it goes to negative. That means, you know, effective interaction between two J-half spin is kind of negative, anti-ferromagnetic. But originally, you know, I said that, you know, ferromagnetic easing. So that means, you know, on top of fellow aging, we have, you know, some sort of anti-fellow interaction superposed. Okay, we don't know what it is, but yeah, there could be. And then people discuss, you know, because of additional interaction on top of KTF, somehow grand state is, you know, magnetic order state instead of KTF spin liquid. And we didn't give up. And we tried to find the KTF state, you know, somewhere around. And somehow, you know, we did a lot of, you know, chemistry. And we found a three-dimensional analog of two-dimensional Hankam, which we named hyper Hankam. And this crystal structure is interesting. In Hankam, okay, you have zigzag chain connected by bridge. And you just rotate, you know, one of the zigzag chain and connect it with, you know, upper and lower plane. And by making that, you maintain 320-degree bond, and all iridium site equivalent, but, you know, they are connected three-dimensionally. Okay, so this is really three-dimensional analog of Hankam lattice. And if, you know, you have XYZ bond on top of that, you know, theorists can calculate. But actually, even before we find this, theorists calculated the ground state of this, and they found the ground state of this 3D Hankam should be, again, quantum spin liquid. And we are glad, but, you know, again, you know, taking a look at susceptibility, you don't see nothingness. You find a clear signature of magnetic, you know, ordering. And Radu is here, and Radu clarified the ground state is some sort of non-collinear, you know, very complex, you know, ordering. And again, you know, we suspect harmful non-KTF interactions. James analysis, you know, find another form of a three-dimensional Hankam called the harmonic Hankam analysis. You know, there are many kinds of Hankam analysis. And again, you know, they find the magnetic ordering around the same temperature. And recently, you know, this compound, zeginocloning 3, that has, you know, again, you know, 5, you know, d electron, but in 4d orbital. But since it's quite ionic, somehow we believe this kind of represents the KTF physics in a very well. Still, this compound you find a magnetic, clear signature of magnetic ordering. But now, people start seeing a kind of high energy feature of this compound, and they discuss Kirchhoff signature at, high energy. And also, people start discussing by applying field systems kind of ordering melts into liquid in the state. But anyway, at the moment, all the compound people failed to find nothingness. But because of my educational background, we still, look, for the nothingness. And again, we start, searching for new compound. And recently, we found this hydrogen honeycomb. The ground state is nothingness, paramagnetic. And we claim this is realization of a quantum spin liquid on honeycomb lattice. So what we did was starting from lithium iridate, which does show long range ordering, we used soft chemistry. Soft chemistry means technique called battery. Okay, we kind of replaced all the lithium in between layers with proton, hydrogen. And this honeycomb plane, we didn't touch. So this lithium to iridium O3, you find the chemical formula. And the lithium iridium to O6, is a kind of honeycomb layer. And this is lithium in between. And you just replace all lithium in between plane with hydrogen. That's why chemical formula is H3 lithium iridium to O6. So this is a kind of a result of structure refinement. Because of stacking disorder, so there's a big asymptotic. But comparing with lithium iridate, which does show magnetic ordering, first of all, hydrogen is smaller, so in plane, distance is kind of a short. Second, somehow the honeycomb plane is compressed. So therefore, in each iridium octahedra, you have stronger trigonal distortion than lithium iridate. And second, the stacking pattern is slightly different from lithium iridate, and kind of oxidant in upper plane and oxidant in the lower plane faces kind of each other, and we cannot fix the position of hydrogen very well, but it's highly likely. Hydrogen is located in between oxygen, so like H2O like molecule here. Okay, that's how structure kind of formed. And this is a kind of basic characterization of our hydrogen honeycomb. And first of all, resistivity is quite insulating. Ground state is a J1/2 Mott state, as in the other iridium 4+ compound. And especially doesn't show any anomaly like this. And then susceptibility, okay. So there is some Curie-like increase, which I discuss later on. But if we kind of remove this Curie-like component, somehow susceptibility shows a blue peak and holds on to constant value. Okay. And the Curie was caused again antiferromagnetic. So there must be anti-ferro interaction superposed on top of Kirchhoff interaction. But anyway, so in susceptibility, space heat, we didn't see anything. So we expect some sort of nothingness. That's how we went to NMO. Because susceptibility and the space heat is not very sensitive probe to weak order. So in order to do NMO, so we kind of aligned the powder out of soft chemistry. And so we have 001 and 110 kind of oriented sample. Okay. And here is the NMO spectrum. Okay. And this position of NMO peak, it's called a night shift, representing a static susceptibility. So you can see static susceptibility behave like this way. Now, this P-Quiris, somehow represents a distribution of internal field around nuclei. If, there were any magnetic ordering, short range, long range, that's gonna give light to, distribution of magnetic field. And then those, peak should, split or at least, broaden. Okay? And here is the temporal dependence of, half radius of this peak. And down to low temperature, you don't see any significant broadening. This actually, temporal dependence reflects the, susceptibility. Actually, this is called the demagnetization effect. So, okay. But, besides that, you don't see any temporal dependence of half radius. And maybe for your information, this bar represents the distribution of magnetic moment, over the order of 10 to the minus 3 newbie. Okay? So that means that, essentially no inhomogeneous, field distribution. Well, maybe some of you, are kind of aware of those organic spin leakage, Hilbert-Smith spin leakage. And maybe it might not be fair to show this polycrystalline data. But anyway, those, compound, at low temperature, you can see kind of broadening clearly. Right? But somehow our Hancom, compound, we don't see anything. So at least we are sure that, the system remains, paramagnetic, down to, below 1K. This is less than 1% of magnetic coupling J. So we are happy. We finally, find that, kind of nothingness. And just this comparison tells us this is kind of what, as far as, I understand, the cleanest spin leakage candidate, compound known so far. And if you do plot, position of a peak, okay, in other function of temperature, you can reduce temporal dependent susceptibility. And okay, this is nicely uniform susceptibility. And again, at the high temperature, you have Curie-Weiss lake, behavior, and the broad peak at 130, and the intersusceptibility goes down, and below 40 K, it's kind of flat. And this is kind of zero, okay, determined by night shift. So at equal zero limit, you have finite susceptibility left. And you might, want to take, some sort of gapless excitation. But it depends on the mechanism. But anyway, so from, night shift, it is clear, paramagnetic state, remains, and the ground state, should be kind of spin leakage. Now, let me discuss spin excitation. So here is the temporal dependence of 1 over T1T, and the 1 over T1T kind of represents the density of spin excitations, or maybe square of, spin excitations. Okay? And, at the high temperature, again, 1 over T1T, you can see Curie-Weiss like increase, so indicating the presence of local moment, okay? 1 over T1 dependence. And within a lowering temperature, okay, so this is, a relaxation rate, for lithium and hydrogen. And the lithium shows a very clear decrease, but, hydrogen shows a kind of increase with decreasing temperature, as you can see. So there is contrast between lithium and hydrogen. And as you see, lithium is located at the center of Hancom. But hydrogen is, located around, one specific bond. So therefore, lithium is kind of overlapping in kind of spin correlation over hexagon, and the hydrogen is sensitive to nearest neighbor correlation. And this means, this is called structure effect. Over hexagon, antifellow correlation is somehow developing with, degree temperature. That's why 1 over T1T decreases. But if you take a look at nearest neighbor correlation, nearest neighbor correlation is very weak, or even could be ferromagnetic. So there is a big contrast between nearest neighbor correlation and the over hexagon correlation. But if you have kind of superposition of a long range ant fellow and a fellow cave, this could happen. So but this could be evidence you have kind of superposition of two kind of conflicting interactions. And at lower temperature, you find kind of a dense, low-lying excitation. Okay? And somehow it looked like almost Coringa-like. Coringa means that expected for metallic state. Okay, so you see a lot of low-lying excitations. And within an increasing field, however, you see kind of decrease of 1 over T1 T. Okay? That means, somehow by applying field, you create a kind of a gap, okay? And then you can see decrease of 1 over T1 T below 1K at 1 Tesla, around 2K at 2 Tesla, 5K around 5 Tesla. That means that you create some sort of a gap in this excitation of the order mu BH. Somehow the mu BH in the business in counting. So somehow there is a kind of low-lying excitation, and we have some gap, with the order mu BH. But remember, this is night shift, and with a different field, 2 Tesla, 5 Tesla, and temperature independent from 1K to 40K, you don't see anything. But this T1 channel, the dynamic channel, you see a lot of relaxation and there's a kind of gap. So there's a kind of contrasting behavior between 1 over T1T and the night shift. And this is specific heat at low temperature. And again, you can see some sort of G1 gapping. And at B equals 0, species shows a very weak divergent behavior scaled by 1 over square root T. Okay, blue. And if you apply field, again, you see suppression of C over T, meaning that, some sort of gap opening of the order of mu BH. And maybe, this is 1 over square root T divergence, might suggest that density of state is scaled by 1 over square root T. And that, in a gap state, it's somewhat linear in T, means that, C over T is scaled by T. And that might mean, density of states, something like, scaled by E. And interestingly, because of this mu BH in scale, if, we multiply the Riemannian factor of, scale root B, and plot, all, special data as a factor of T or B, you can see some sort of scaling behavior. And interestingly, the same scaling, holds, also for 1 over T1. That means, we are looking at the same, kind of local excitation. And because of, this, 1 over square root E and E linear, we might kind of model, density of excitation, like, scale root E diverges at equal 0. And with field, you have a linear kind of gap. And this is, kind of a scaling for, specific heat and 1 over T1T. Okay, both kind of reflect the density of state. And we see kind of the same, kind of scaling as a function of T, 1 over T over B. And if you assume, this kind of, density, of state, we can kind of quantitatively reproduce those kind of scaling function very well. Okay? So that means, somehow we have this kind of density of state. And if we have a kind of Fermionic, character of those excitations, we can understand all those excitations. Now, question is, what is, this excitation? And recently, actually, 2 weeks ago, we checked, kind of magnetization. And this is a kind of curie, like, kind of increase, we observed low temperature. And we found actually within increased magnetic field, there is a kind of substantial, field dependence. And of course, entropy is, connected to magnetization through Maxwell equation, thermodynamic Lebesgue theorem, right? So if we have this kind of field dependence, there should be change in magnetization. And we found actually using a Maxwell relationship, those two are the same, essentially, we're kind of correlated. So assuming this, we can quantitatively explain, this field dependence of specific heat. Or actually, even in magnetization, we can see the same scaling as a function of a T over B. So this, clearly tell, this low temperature Curie-like behavior, specific heat, and 1 over T1 T, which, she's in a bulk, right? Because this is a bulk NMR. All see the same. And some, excitation with, gap, under the field. But taking a look at, night shift, we don't see anything. Okay, so uniform susceptibility channel, we don't see anything. But, somehow those, probes, coherently observe something. And the only way to understand this is that we have kind of spin leakage to the background, and we have, quite, localized excitation. And good night shift, probes, field here. So if you are away from those localized spin excitation, you can be kind of irrelevant. And at the moment, if this is kind of a, kind of local excitation, most likely some sort of a spin defect. And if, those spin defect, okay, explain all visible entropy because of thermodynamics, this magnetization explains all, entropy we observed. And if, that comes from localized spin excitations, there remains nothing. So in that case, we suspected a ground state kind of a gap fill. So we have some sort of a gap in the excitation in the spectrum. And of course, in a Kitaifu language, if the interaction can anisotropic, you can have gap fill spin leakage. Of course, you may ask, why night shift is finite. But of course, I understand that there are many mechanisms. Even in the presence of excitation gap, you can have finite susceptibility. And maybe if you can make some theoretical prediction, what kind of excitation should be observed, on a specific spin leakage model, that might help to identify kind of what it is, more than that. Yeah, of course, at the moment, we cannot completely rule out the possibility of this local excitation come from exotic excitation like local Majorana excitation. And of course, the Majorana flux is kind of highly kind of localized. Yeah, no, yeah, I'm fine. And this is kind of too exotic, and I shouldn't push this too much, but a few kind of interesting kind of observations. There are kind of sample with hydrogen, and recently we made the deuterated sample, and there are two hydrogen samples on this plot. But those low temperature EPD-like state, especially heat, all agree with each other, quite reproducible. Of course, that could be by chance on these three samples. And theoretically, those group of people, led by Motome, calculated the thermodynamics as a function of temperature. And as they say, if we have a gapless Kitaifu liquid, at low temperature, you can find some sort of specific anomaly. And this kind of represents ordering of, vortex, Majorana vortex. And as they say, this, ordering, takes place at very low temperature, like, below 1% of J or K, magnetic interaction. That should be by far less than 1K. So towards very low temperature, you can have kind of ordering of flux. But however, they say this flux carries 50% of spin entropy. That means 50% of R log 2. Don't worry. Yeah, and we observe only at most 5% at low temperature. So in that sense, this entropy a bit too big, to be assigned to this exotic scenario. But anyway, so I think I could have convinced you. We finally find nothingness, and at least the quantum spin naked state established, we hope. And of course, second step is identify what it is, and that's actually we have kind of still many kind of puzzles, and we kind of observed quite localized spin excitations at low temperature, well described. Okay, and those three probe magnetization, specific heat, T1, coherently or quantitatively describe all localized spin excitation. On the other hand, night shift doesn't see anything. And if we believe this is due to some sort of spin defect, like defect doping into spin liquid, that might mean we have gap quantum spin liquid. Okay, anyway, so to go further, we need some input from kind of theory, and if you could give me some input further, I would appreciate it. Thank you very much for attention.
Yeah. You said something quickly which I didn't quite understand. This low energy specific heat,
yeah.
If you just integrate under it, how much entropy do you get?
Okay, 100 actually we cannot integrate because of a lattice contribution. But up to 20K.
No, this is at very low temperatures. I'm just looking at.
Yeah, and then I just integrate decaying, like right? 20K at about 5%.
So 5% of R log 2. You have integrated from your lowest temperature to 20 Kelvin.
Yeah.
And you get 5% of R log 2?
Yes.
Hmm?
Yeah.
That's all?
Yeah. So very small entropy.
Now, just to clarify, the difference between night shift behavior and the uniform susceptibility, so the uniform susceptibility is seeing primarily the spin defects, and the night shift is seeing both defects and some intrinsic behavior, and they're somehow canceling to...
Yeah, so night shift, they feel kind of a local field. So therefore, if they are away from a local spin excitation, you receive a negative small kind of a contribution. If those spin excitation is somehow coupled to bulk, you can have some spin relaxation through that channel. That's what I mean. So there must be some coupling between local excitation and bulk. And normally, when you have kind of relaxation through local excitation channel, you see broadening of a night shift. Because those two are kind of correlated. But in this case, somehow, the night shift, we don't see anything. But still, somehow, relaxation, they seem to be connected. But without assuming a local character of excitation, we cannot understand the contrast between night shift and the T1.
What nuclei have you done night shift on?
We did both lithium and hydrogen.
Lithium.
So, yeah, we did, yeah. And
hydrogen and what else?
Hydrogen, lithium.
Lithium.
Yeah. So lithium is at the center of the honeycomb, and the hydrogen is on top, and both consistently show the same in 1/T1.
So, just to clarify, you seem to be implying that constant night shift requires gapless excitations. I don't think in a system with strong spin orbit coupling you can get a constant.
Yeah. That's what I meant. Yeah.
So if you have strong spin off, you could have a gap and still get a finite susceptibility.
Yeah. Understand that, yeah.
So, Hida, two quick questions. Yes. How large are your samples, question number one, and the other one is, have you tried to intentionally scramble up your samples to increase the number of possible defects?
That's a good question, but at the moment, we are throwing, we kind of are going through three harvesting a sample, and we haven't reached that stage yet. Yeah.
But have you seen samples? Have you measured samples in which the apparent density of defects is
higher? Yeah. So at the moment, we measured the two hydrogenated sample from different batch, and one from deuterated sample, and they all show the same behavior. And exactly the same specific heat. That's why I cannot throw intrinsic defect completely at this moment.
Yeah. So I guess I'm confused. If these are local defects, why don't they give a Schottky anomaly in the specific heat? Why do they give a t to the minus one half?
Yeah, because if you understand that some sort of a local excitation, Schottky-like excitation, there is a kind of distribution of, kind of energies kind of splitting.
I see.
And so if completely free, of course, you should see this. But suppose if you have a kind of a distribution of, energies, like interaction with kind of their surroundings. Yeah, so you can have some sort of weighted average of Schottky contribution. Okay, that we believe that's why,
So it's more like some random singlet
phase. Yeah, or maybe, from localized, excitation, each nuclei, stay awake, gradually, and, they feel kind of a different, connection to local excitation.
Similar question. So, can you really control the position of hydrogen in between the iridium layers, or maybe just like if it's all moving around, then these layers become very uncorrelated?
That's actually, we don't know, because the hydrogen is the lightest element. So, in the X-ray, it's hard to detect the position of hydrogen. But because electrostatic reason, we are very sure actually, it should be in between two oxygens facing with each other. But of course, that can be hydrogen bond. So there might be some sort of a quantum-mechanically, fluctuating state like water. But we cannot see it.
So, Hide, you showed data with different hydrogen and lithium contents. So I was wondering, can you think of this that replacing lithium with hydrogen is like negative chemical pressure? Do you have a kind of phase diagram with different contents of hydrogen and lithium?
Yeah. So, first of all, after treatment, because we observe lithium NMO. So, if there is a kind of mixture of lithium and hydrogen, we might be able to see that from NMO. However, within our research, we don't see that. That means, because ion gradient is very much different, I suspect there's kind of phase separation and kind of only hydrogen lesion, the lithium lesion kind of coexist. And at the end of the day, everywhere is kind of covered by hydrogen. And that kind of sample we measure.
So I guess I have two questions.
Yes.
So the first is, you spent a lot of time talking about the Gataev model.
Yes.
But I didn't understand this last. No Gataev coupling wanted. Comment.
Oh. Yeah, because apparently we have non-Gataev. I forgot the end. After that, there must be non-Gataev. Likely antifellow.
Because there's
interaction superpose. Uh-huh. And once we introduce that, everything can be kind of modified significantly. And at the moment, those thermodynamic calculation is for pure Gataev, without any interaction kind of superpose.
Uh-huh.
I know that kind of calculation is super hard calculation for theorists, but perhaps in order to compare, experiment and the theory, we might need that kind of step. That's kind of my message.
I see. And my other question is, I was still confused, which honeycomb lattice is this hydrogenated lithium. You went through several honeycomb lattices in the talk. Hyper honeycomb and Is it a bilayer? I didn't quite. Just a single.
Graphene.
It's a simple case. That's.
So, what's your question?
I think it's been answered, but the question was which honeycomb lattice was this a new material? So it's already been answered.
Okay. you're a better experimentalist.
So maybe one.
Yeah.
How is this data different from your pressure data? Like, I'm not sure if you have pressure with ARPA, but there are pressure data on the betas, LIO.
Yeah.
And under pressure, the magnetic order disappears, and there are claims of spin liquid. So I wonder if the hydrogen is smaller than the lithium, act like a pressure, then you may compare the two data sets, one with under pressure, one with a hydrogen substitute, and see that, is there how different they are?
Yeah, that's kind of a very good question. And the question is that, we have three-dimensional version of this honeycomb. And at ambient pressure, they do order. But in under pressure, ordering kind of disappears. And the question is, how can I compare this with that? And at the moment, my best answer is that there seems to be two phases under high pressure. And one is perhaps very close to this one. But the other look like the old boring dimer singlet. We see big modulation of a ball.
But then you have phase structure.
Yeah, and there is a first order big phase transition. So and in that sense, that region is kind of different story. But before that, we seem to have kind of small window, which shows quite similar behavior at this. But at the moment, quality of pressure different from a structural characterization and NMO. So there is some confusion about the experiment. So yeah, let me have some time to clarify, what is the pressure we are working on.
We should close because it's late. But so there is a talk at 1:30, which I guess. Yes, let's thank Hide again for a wonderful talk.